Welcome to Soundstations. Please pick up a pair of headphones and be seated.
Okay, next, it is my great privilege to introduce a performer I've known for a long, long time.
Calling Dick Tracy! Calling Dick Tracy! The Melonian Diamond has just been stolen from the museum! Calling Dick Tracy!
Our marine scientists at Vulcania believe that the sediments below the waves contain a continuous record of terrestrial history.
Let us fly together, hand in hand, on the wings of joy, kindness, compassion, and love.
WW Radio, your information station.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to the WW Radio Show, your guide to Walt Disney World, the Disney parks and experiences around the world. I'm your host, Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 815. And since 2004, we've been on this incredible journey together, sharing the magic of Disney here through the podcast, live shows every Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Facebook and YouTube, blog, events, newsletters, and so much more. And whether you are a lifelong Disney fan or discovering the magic for the very first time, and whether you're new to the show or have been listening for the past 20 years, you are part of this amazing community and family. Come join the fun and find everything you need over at www.radio.com. And this week, we're going to step behind the scenes at the Epcot International Festival of the Arts as we dive into some of the magic and magic makers that make this one of Disney's most creative festival and celebrations. I invite you to join me for exclusive interviews with representatives from Disney Theatrical, who curates the Disney on Broadway concert series, and merchandise, who helps oversee the artist bookings and the festival art curation. We'll virtually go backstage to learn some of the stories, secrets, and inspirations that make this festival, dare I say, a party for the senses, if we want to use an old food and wine reference. You're going to find out what makes this also a must-visit for Disney fans, art lovers, and Broadway enthusiasts alike. Then stay tuned for our Disney Trivia Question of the Week for your chance to win a Disney Prize package. Please connect and chat with me on social. I'm at Lou Mangiello on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And if you are looking for a speaker for your event, conference, or business and want to apply lessons from the Disney parks and Walt Disney to your organization, or if you are a creator or solopreneur and you want to turn your passion into your profession, head on over to loumangiello.com, whether it is speaking engagements, workshops, strategies, or events to take you and your ideas to the next level. I'd love to help you transform what you love into what you do. And if you like what you hear, and I hope that you do, please share the show and tell a friend. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WW Radio Show. This week, we are pulling back the curtain and stepping into the world of Disney on Broadway at Epcot's International Festival of the Arts. And joining me is Adrian Sarple, the Associate Director from Disney Theatrical, who plays a pivotal role in shaping the Disney on Broadway concert series, one of the festival's most highly anticipated and beloved experiences. We're going to explore what it takes to bring the magic of Broadway to the stage at Epcot and what's in store for this year's series. Adrian, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Lou.
So glad let's start off with a little bit of Adrian's origin story. Tell me a little bit about your role, please, at Disney Theatrical.
Well, you can probably hear I'm not originally from the United States. I worked for many years for Cameron Mackintosh over in the UK, but I had an association with Disney Theatrical because Cameron and Disney do a co-production of Mary Poppins, which is how my journey with Disney Theatrical started. Roll on many, many years. And I was in a meeting with Tom Schumacher, and we talked about the possibility of me coming to work for Disney Theatrical full time. And that worked out on a show called Frozen. So we've been now rolling that out around the year, around the world for the last nearly 8 years now. So that's my mainstay with them. And then a couple of years ago, they asked me to take over the Disney on Broadway series at the Festival of the Arts.
Yeah, and so Disney on Broadway, Broadway itself, is celebrating its 30th year, which is incredible this year. And once again, what we as guests can get is a taste of that from Broadway in New York City back at Epcot. So for those who are unfamiliar, can you tell me a little bit about what the Disney on Broadway concert series is during the festival?
I mean, yes. I mean, it's in every which way, it's a celebration of both the wonderful music of Disney, but more specifically, the music of Disney on Broadway. So therefore, we only do songs from the Broadway canon, so anything that has been on the Broadway stage, and a little bit beyond that as well. We've sort of stretched the boundaries. Sometimes we'll look into future productions, stuff that's in development. We might dip into those a little bit. But really, it's bringing to the audience something of the experience of having those true Broadway stars in front of them singing these songs. It's songs that they hear, you know, anyone who's spent much time at Disney World, you'll hear these songs all day long playing in all kinds of stores and down the streets and everywhere. So they're always being celebrated. But this is a very particular way of celebrating their songs.
And this is not just a celebration of and inspired by the music of Broadway. When we talk about the Disney on Broadway concert series, guests at Epcot are being treated to not just the music and compositions from Broadway, but a lot of the performers as well. Can you talk a little bit about the process of selecting the shows and the music and the performers for the series year over year?
Yes, indeed. Where we tend to start with selecting the performers is those who have originated roles, and we have performers who come back year on year who have either originated the roles or have made a very big stamp on the roles that they are playing. For instance, Michael James Scott, who's a favorite down there, and actually a Orlando born. He's been playing the Disney the genie now in Aladdin on Broadway for years, and is very much beloved there. We use original characters like Josh Strickland, who was the original Tarzan. We have Casey Levy down there, Paddy Murin down there, John Riddle for the first time, who was the original Hans on Broadway. Obviously, Casey was Elsa, Paddy was Anna. So we try to look for the original ones. But of course, what we can't do is only stay with the original ones, because it takes a long time to put on a musical and to create a new musical. So we don't have a new musical coming out every year, and therefore a whole bunch of new stars that we can draw upon who have originated roles. So we do look at, like I say, people who have made a significant impact and who have a profile within our Broadway community.
Yeah, you almost have that embarrassment of riches, right? And having to make what I have to assume are difficult choices, and that balance of bringing back the beloved favorites while introducing new acts to keep the series fresh and exciting.
Exactly. And it is very much about trying to keep the series fresh and exciting. You know, the song canon doesn't grow by very much every year. You know, there might be a new musical coming out. For instance, Hercules, which is now being done for the first time in London. It was done previously at the Paper Mill, just been opened in Hamburg. And there'll be new songs that come out of that. Nothing that we can sing at the moment, because it hasn't yet been put up there, so we're not allowed to get to them. But once that's up and it's established, we'll be able to bring in those new songs. But they don't come along very often. So we are singing the same song canon, and which is fine, because they're all sort of number one hits and they're all crowd favorites. So, you know, we'll try and change it up by bringing in new faces. We have three new faces coming to the Festival of the Arts this year. We had a couple new last year, and already Randy Meyer, the producer, and I are discussing future artists for this to keep it fresh. So, you know, we may be singing the same songs, but someone else is singing them. Someone has a different perspective on those songs, and they relate to the audience in different ways.
Yeah, and the experience inside the America Gardens Theater, obviously very different than an intimate Broadway production. But how do you sort of translate that grandeur of Broadway into what really is a very intimate concert setting at Epcot, while you still sort of maintain that magic and the authenticity of the original show?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It is a concert, of course. So when I came on board with this, I was like, my first question to myself was, how do I bring in some elements of what we do on Broadway? So it's not just an artist singing a Disney song. It is a Broadway artist singing a song that has been used on Broadway. What we have in Disney Theatrical is imagery that we have of our sets and production shots and things like that. So what we're trying to do is integrate some of those images. We created a whole new sizzle or teaser for the beginning of the show that really shows the broad spectrum of what we do at Disney Theatrical. So, and we reconfigured the stage slightly to try and make it a little bit more theatrical in it. We've got some layers, levels rather, on the stage, and reconfigured the video screens to try and make it feel a little bit more like a theater space, like with wings that come down, so envelop the audience a little bit more. It's a big house, you know, it's very, very wide, and it seats some 2,000 people. So to try and make that intimate and to give them an experience of that, it's a hybrid, of course, because it is a concert. So at times we'll, the fourth wall will be completely shattered and they'll just enjoy performing to and with the audiences. But then at other times, like, Josh Strickland very famously does Santa Fe from Newsies. And we created an atmosphere last year to make it as intimate as possible by creating this sort of beautiful landscape around him so that he was sitting within that. So yeah, we'll always endeavor to, and we're constantly tweaking with it. In fact, I was having conversations this morning with our video creator to just talk about new ideas and how we can constantly keep it interesting. There is a balance, of course, because what we're not doing is showing a movie. Mm-hmm. It's like the sets are on stage. It's there to highlight, to complement, and to enhance the experience. So that's what we're always trying to do.
And like you said, even though it is a relatively large open-air theater, there is this wonderful sense of intimacy that you get, and being able to get so close to the performers too, I think, is one of the huge appeals. It's why the lines will often form very early in the day. And some folks, you know, not coming just to the 5:30 or 6:45 or 8 show, they'll go to all three.
Yeah, they will. There's a remarkable fan base who are very, very loyal and clearly enjoy it. And I understand that people come back year after year to see this, which is wonderful. Talking of the intimacy, I think it has a lot to do with the performers as well. With that caliber of performer, they can draw you in. They know how to occupy a space and to make you feel safe with them up there on stage. They make it very personal.
Yeah, there's almost that sense sometimes of he or she is looking directly at me, and I have that type of one-on-one connection with the performer that you can't necessarily get from, you know, a balcony or mezzanine seat on Broadway somewhere.
Yes, very true. I mean, I think a performer at that level in their career, there's an innate confidence to what they do. They know who they are as a performer. They know how to deliver a song, and they trust in that, and therefore they can relax, and they therefore relax the audience and draw them in better.
And what I've always loved about this, and as somebody who has young kids, my daughter is involved in theater production and design, and always loved going to these shows when she was younger and now, you know, going on her own. I think this is such a great introduction to Disney on Broadway. And I think it opens both eyes and doors for people, especially kids, who may have never heard these songs performed in this way, certainly not live.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a lovely thing to say, and it's what we want to happen from this. You know, it's many things. It's just pure entertainment, but it is also an introduction, as you've said. We're trying to further that experience this year as well. We've been talking for the last couple of years, and it's happening this year, where we are. I think it's at the I want to say the main gate. You might need to fact check this one for me, but it's where we're doing a Disney on Broadway museum. So there'll be an interactive walkthrough museum area where you can go and see some of the set, bits of set. I think there are props, there are costumes, and it's just actually been the Museum of Broadway in New York, and it's now come down here.
Yeah, and Communicore Hall is going to be the utilize, which is a perfect utilization of that space. Like, that's exactly what that space was designed for. Because we can get, unlike a museum, I think even like the performers, we can get very up close to those costumes and props from, you know, shows that we know and love, like Lion King and Aladdin.
Yeah, very much so. And it's something we've been, like I say, we've been working on for a couple of years, and we've done a couple of pre-versions of this. We did at D23 this year. There was quite a large setup that we had in the hall there. Like I say, Disney at the Broadway Museum have just done it, and now I believe we're expanding it even more. So I think every time we've done it, we've learned a little bit more. So I think this will be the best version of it that we've had. So if you have seen it in New York, I would say come along and see it here as well.
Yeah, it adds another wonderful layer to the experience. And whether that's the first thing that maybe a child sees that makes them say, hey, I want to go and see these performances over at the Imara Gardens Theater, or vice versa, I think it's a wonderful addition. One thing I noticed you talked about, there's new and returning performers this year. However, I noticed on the schedule, February 24th, there are special final performances, Rhonda Ingram, Carol Lindsay, Michael James Scott, and Kissy Simmons. Quickly just talked about what that special final performance night is going to be.
So, I mean, as you said, it is Disney on Broadway has reached 30 years. And so we're just coming to the end of that anniversary now. So we decided that we might do a show that honors the 30 years of that. So we're still developing it. There's some filming going on for it. The scripting is pretty much done. I don't want to give away too much at the moment. What can I say? But really, we're going to be taking on a beautiful journey through the entire lifespan of Disney on Broadway. Which 30 years, that's a lot of songs, but we also have limited times before they start setting off fireworks. So we're having to try and fit it all in that time. But I'm feeling fairly confident. I think I mentioned before using imagery and stuff for the visuals of it. I think we're going to go a lot further with this one. We're going to try and make it a little more visually exciting than just the performances. We will, of course, still focus very much on the performers who are there to deliver these songs. We won't interrupt that, but in between, the interstitial stuff will be should be fairly exciting.
Well, I'll make sure I book my Disney on Broadway concert series dining package for February 24th now, before the show goes live.
There you go. Then you can get in the front row.
Absolutely. Adrian, this is wonderful. Really looking forward to this year's slate of performances, and I appreciate your time and your the work that you do to bring this to guests every year.
It's a pleasure, Lou. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The Epcot International Festival of the Arts is not just a celebration of creativity on stage. It really is a feast for the eyes and the soul, in many cases like my own, the stomach as well. And it also showcases incredible artwork and one-of-a-kind merchandise that captures the magic of Disney. And here to share insights into the curation process and the artist collaborations is Aaron Babcock. He is a merchandise manager with Merchandise Strategy, who helps lead the way in coordinating the festival's artist bookings and creating the stunning art collections for guests to enjoy and take home. Aaron, it is a pleasure to have you here on WDW Radio.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So let's start off a little bit with you. Talk to me a little bit about what your role as merchandise manager is specifically for the Festival of the Arts.
My role is to mainly identify the artists that will be presenting their work at the Festival of the Arts. We work directly with them to come up with the concepts that they're going to be painting and showcasing. And my role, I don't do a lot of the creative driving for it. We leave that up to the artist to create the work. But my role is to make sure that we have a good balance of the right characters, and that we don't have, for example, 10 pieces of Ariel, that we have a good balance across the board of art styles, characters, films, so on and so forth.
And so tell me a little bit about, because I think about this every year, that the selection and curation process of the artwork and artists who are featured at the festival. Are there themes or ideas or sort of specific visions that help guide your choices?
We're working towards getting themes into the to future Festival of the Art programs, but for now, what it really is we select the artist, and then we kind of give them free rein. They present to us about 4 to 5 concepts, each artist, and then we go through and we select the right images so that we can make sure that we again get that balance that we're looking for. This year we did kind of have a little bit of a fun with some of the artists, and we asked them to create something that was a magical Mickey Disney moment for them. Some of them took it literally with magic, and some of them had a little bit more fun and subtle play on the magic on it. So we think there's some opportunity for us there. But generally, we leave it completely up to the artist. We will offer insight as to say, hey, you know who's trending right now is Moana or is Stitch. But we don't try to get too much into it because we want the work to be presented to be their work, not what we want them to paint.
And I have to imagine you have the same sort of opportunity and challenge that other festivals and other divisions of the festival has to have. So whether it is the culinary team deciding which marketplaces are we going to have that are festival favorites to come back? Which performing artists are we going to have come back while still having to balance new ones as well? I have to imagine from the artist and merchandise perspective, you've got to strike that similar balance as well. Like, I think if I didn't see Noah on the promenade, like something would be wrong, but we also like to see new faces and new sort of artistic inspiration coming on as well.
You are exactly right. That is one of the fun things that we get to do. We have two artist groups that we work with here. One we call the Disney Gallery Program, which are collection of artists that we work directly with, we contract with, and that we actually purchase the art from them. The other artist, like you mentioned, Noah, is a consignment artist that we do a lot of the similar work. We just don't determine what inventory they're bringing in. That's really all on them. But what we do is we start as soon as the festival is over, we start analyzing what worked, what didn't work. But we have to be very careful because some artists will have 4 or 5 paintings, some artists will have 2. Some artists will do like a Darren Wilson's doing a Nightmare Before Christmas piece this year. We know that's going to be very strong character content because we've not had that before. Other artists won't. So we can't just go based on what sells the most. It's a lot of what do the fans and the collectors come back and want every year, to your point. If we didn't have Darren every year, if we didn't have an Ashley Taylor every year, we would hear from it. So what we do is we know that we generally invite about 38 to 40 artists a year, and we know that we're going to bring back a good 35 of them. We know which ones those are going to be. And then we leave the others up to see, do we want to rotate a new artist in, or bring someone back who hasn't been here in a while? If we do bring a new artist in, we do make the commitment that we will bring them here for about 3 years because we want to make sure that they build up a following and we're not just here as a one-time shot, and hope for the best for them.
Yeah, so that was part of my next question, thinking about, that selection process. Listen, Darren, I've been doing this for 20 years, and as long as the festival is going on, I get emails all the time, like, how do I get my arm? Like, I'm not the guy. I mean, now Aaron is clearly the guy, but do you have any, I'm not going to give away your email address, don't worry, but like, do you have programs or initiatives aimed at helping to discover and showcase some emerging Disney-inspired artists?
We do. We travel to different shows, and believe it or not, one of the shows that we do a lot of, we hit Comic Cons because they have this thing called Artist Alley at the Comic Cons, and that's where you'll find a lot of up and coming artists. Many of them are doing Disney work, legally or not. That's a whole other story, but they are doing the art, so we get to get a taste of what they do. We also scour the internet, and we will look and see what's going on there. And what we'll do is we'll find an artist that we like their style, and then we'll present that to a team that's here within our building. And we'll have them vet, air quotes, vet their work, and say, hey, in this artist's interpretive art style, do they do a really good job of making sure the character meets its integrity and we have really good storytelling? So we do. We always on the lookout for a new artist, especially if they do something new and unique that we do not have. And then we go through the whole vetting process, make sure we're a good fit with them and that they want to come work with us and so on and so forth. We generally bring on board. Within the artist program, we'll bring on probably 2 or 3 new artists a year. Not because that's all we can find, just because we have so many, we want to make sure everybody has some work to still do.
Right. Yeah, I've been to places like MegaCon, and I'll see an artist in Artist Alley, and say, like, this is incredible. Like, you should be at Festival of the Arts. Like, oh, you can get me at Festival. I'm like, no, you should be at Festival of the Arts. I'm not the guy, and I'm certainly not, you know, again, character integrity being so very important. What might look good in Artist Alley might not necessarily be appropriate for the promenade. One of the things I love about this festival in particular is that it not only invites those who are interested in enjoying and taking in the creative arts, but who also want to maybe pursue that. And I love the fact that there are so many art experiences and live demonstrations that the guests can look forward to. So it's not just a matter of purchasing something and taking it home, but there really is an interactive element, whether it is getting their hands, quote unquote, dirty with chalk, or getting a chance to meet some of the artists. I love that the artists are actually there, especially on weekends, and will take time and chat with guests as well.
We love that part about it. We have our little artist commune, as we call it, where we ask to keep them all together. And we love the performance art, as we call it, where we have three artists this year who will be doing an actual performance piece. We call it a live painting. We added a new one this year by Greg McCullough that's going to be a really great piece for the guests to see. And we're trying to figure out, how do we do more of that? How do we get the guests to see more of how this art is actually created, to your point, to kind of stimulate some of their own creativity?
And I love, from a, you know, going back to sort of the merchandise aspect of it, right? Bringing a piece of the festival, bring a piece of that art and the artist home with them. I love the fact that the range of art, you know, sometimes you hear that you're going to purchase a piece of art and you instantly think this is something that is outside the scope of what I'm able to afford, or I'm not an art collector, I don't know what to look for. Talk about the importance of having a range from, you know, prints that will be, you know, $30, $40 up to original pieces that can run much higher.
Yeah, that's always a fun thing to play around with. We agree the same way, is we want to make sure that every guest has the opportunity to take something home. What we have found is a lot of guests want to take a lot of pieces home. So we definitely wanted to create more pieces that are able for them to do that. And we try to make sure that each piece is a piece of art. So even though we have a postcard of a lot of the art, it's really, we put a lot of effort into making sure it's the highest quality postcard we can get, so they're feeling like they're getting a nice piece and not just a souvenir postcard. And then we work with each of the artists and we work with the print houses to figure out, how do we really upscale or elevate the story that's being told with the images that we offer from our limited edition prints. So we have a limited edition print for each piece. We have a deluxe print, like you mentioned, then we have a postcard or a mini print. So we have kind of what we call our opening price point. We have a mid price point, then we have that limited edition. Our goal is, in future photos, is to add another price point piece that will give the guest yet another option to collect more pieces.
Yeah, I'm definitely more on the, you know, more on the print side, but there have been pieces that you see that are originals that are truly something special. And it is not necessarily just two-dimensional art that will hang on the wall. I remember last year seeing there are, you know, three-dimensional pieces, there are sculpture, there are large-scale tables as well. So there's also a wide variety of the types of artistic merchandise that's available.
Yeah, we have one artist this year, his name's John Quinn. He's actually a Disney cast member who, because of the 3D piece that we did so well with Miss Mindy before, we asked John, and he's going to do some sculpted pieces for us as well this year. But he did an interesting take, which I can't wait to see what the guest response to is. He actually did a painting of a piece, and then he did a 3D sculpt of that painting. So the subject that's in the painting is also a three-dimensional figurine. The downside is there's only one of the piece, but it'll be a good test for us to keep pushing that envelope of art and finding more than just a 2D piece of art, adding more 3D art, adding more unique mediums into what we offer for the guest.
But I think for a lot of people, myself included, it's a graduating process, right? You go in there and you just like the way something looks, and I just want it on my wall. And then as time goes on, you start to understand more, appreciate more, maybe gravitate towards a certain character or gravitate towards a certain artist. Go back time and again, and next thing you know, you're trying to get, you know, a limited edition lithograph, something that's signed, and then maybe sort of moving your way up to something that is bigger and even more special.
That is our hope, is that they come in, they get bitten by the art bug, they start small, and then they want to go bigger and bigger and keep collecting those pieces. my job is to make sure that we're telling the right story to get the guests into that, and that they walk away going, okay, that piece really impacted me. It made me think differently about what I see as art. And that's kind of the fun part of what we get to do.
And one of the things that I've loved over the years in terms of returning favorites and leaning in us on nostalgia is how much Figment really has played a part in not just the festival sort of being the mascot of it, but seeing a lot of Figment inspired merchandise and different artists' take on this singular character that we've known for so many years.
It's funny that I don't know that we really thought Figment was going to become this when we created him, but he really has become such a beloved fan favorite. And we try to make sure that we don't overexpose him, but we do make sure that we have something new offered for him every year. Miss Mindy, as a matter of fact, she's doing a Figment figurine for us this year. And Figment actually has turned up as the poster for the event this year by artist Rob Kaz. It's an amazing piece of Figment flying over Epcot, which we really think the guests that love Figment will love this piece as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, how much does guest feedback and guest preference influence the type of art and merchandise? I think the amount of Figment that we're starting to see sort of evidences the fact that you do listen to what guest preferences and guest desires are in terms of what they want to see.
Absolutely. We have, during the festival, we talk to as many guests as we can, and we talk to the artists who get talk to the guests even more than that. But then after the festival, we have kind of a post-wrap with all the artists of, okay, talk to us about what did the guests say they wish they saw more of? Because we don't want to just go based on the sales. We want to know, what are they talking to the artist about? What do they like? What do they want to see more of? What do they want to see less of? And we do take all that into account so that we can provide the right thing, you know, tell that right story to the guest.
And I think this festival, you know, look, my favorite festival is the one that I'm at, but this festival over years has really started to grow on me because I think it's sort of a multi-layer festival because there is the culinary arts, the performing arts, and the visual arts. So there's sort of multiple festivals going on at once. And with that comes sort of the blessing almost of overwhelm, right? There's so much to see. What are some things from a merchandise perspective that you think, you know, potentially overlooked or people should make sure that they look for in this year's festival?
Oh, that's a hard one for me because, you know, I love it all, obviously. But there are a couple pieces that I think where we talk with some of the artists and we're working with them to try to start kind of like expand the story. Everybody knows the story of the Haunted Mansion and Constance. Dylan Bonner did a piece this year of Constance actually getting dressed for one of her weddings. So that's something new that you've not seen a part of that story before. You all know it happens, but you haven't seen it. John Nadeau did a piece, actually kind of one of the pieces that really struck me this when I saw the first concept. He did Hunchback of Notre Dame, and he actually did Notre Dame, but the characters are all hidden in the work. So you have to really look for them, which I think is something that, you know, initially you look at it and you see this beautiful piece of the cathedral that just reopened and it's got all that excitement going on it. But then he took it a step further and he's hidden almost all of the characters from the film in the piece of art. So we're trying to get more of our artists to do that and find ways to bring those things into the piece so that the guest starts to really look at the art as it's not just, you know, Mickey standing in front of the castle, but are there elements hidden in there that are kind of an aha moment or that might touch their memory of something a little bit more and be a little bit more special? Always with the thought of making sure when the guests come to our park, the art that they see is not art they can find anywhere else. It is truly exclusive to their experience here.
And to your point, I think sometimes people hear, oh, well, there's a Disney art festival. It's going to be nothing but paintings of Mickey Mouse and Cinderella. There is so much truly fine art that the Disney influence is almost subtle, and you don't feel like it is, you know, everything's all squash and stretch everywhere, but beautiful pieces of art depending on whatever your taste is. There is one thing I have to ask you that breaks my heart every single year, and I understand it's sort of the nature of the beast. One of the things that I love that I can't take home and sometimes I wish I could are the chalk artists. I love the chalk artists on the walkway. And I want to just get up and hug them, especially when it starts to rain. These beautiful pieces of art are literally and figuratively washed away. And sometimes I wish I could almost capture what they're putting on the ground in chalk and pick it up and take it home.
I love the chalk art. It's oftentimes so many people, because of where it's located, they've already passed through, past most of it, and before they get into the real festival, the meat of the festival. So I'm hoping with the festival center kind of moving closer to the opening of the park entrance there, that they'll see more of that and appreciate it. I've tried my hand at chalk art, and I am not good at it. It takes a very special talent to do that work, and I'm with you. I always hope it doesn't rain while they're doing all that work, because it's a lot of work that would that people don't wouldn't get to see if it gets washed away.
And I'm sure, over the years of doing this, you probably see, merchandise for a lot of people is special, right? For some people, it's a souvenir of that time. It's a memory of going with their child. It's a last vacation with their parents. Is there anything that you've seen over the years that some of those moments that you've seen somebody have either with an artist or by taking a piece home that is special? Because I know, like, sometimes just walk on the promenade, you see that family buying that piece that is not just going to be a remembrance of this vacation, but something that is going to be something it's going to be passed down in their family year over year.
I hope that we create something like that every year. That's certainly our goal, is to really hit that moment for the guests that captures a special memory for them, or is you're moved by a piece that you didn't think you were going to be moved, but moved by, and you're like, I got to have that. I've seen that. I've been doing this for 36 years, not photo, but with Disney 36 years, and I have seen that. And there is a special warming of your heart when you see that moment, when that guest makes that connection to a piece, and you go, okay, this is why I do what I do, because that moment right there was made all of it worth it. So I'm hoping that we find a few of those this year for the guest.
I'm sure you will. Aaron, I appreciate everything that you and the artists do to bring such a special experience to our guests. Looking forward to this year's festival.
Thank you so much.
Get ready to test your Disney knowledge with this week's trivia question of the week. Whether it is a hidden detail, a classic quote, or a bit of Disney history, if you know the answer, you can enter for a chance to win a Disney prize package. And this week's trivia segment is brought to you by the most important part of WDW Radio, which is you. Because by joining the WDW Radio Nation family, you're not only helping to support every podcast, live show, and event, but you're becoming part of the magic that makes it all possible. And for as little as $1 per month, you'll also unlock amazing perks like exclusive scavenger hunts, monthly group calls, access to our private community, surprise care packages from the parks, and much more. Even better, your support fuels our Dream Team project, which has raised more than $550,000 to send children with life-threatening illnesses to Walt Disney World through Make-A-Wish. So together, we are creating magic for families and the WDW Radio community. I invite you to please come be part of the WDW Radio Nation family by going to wdwradio.com/support. Now, before we get to this week's question, let's go back, review last week's, and select our winner. So this past weekend marked the annual Run Disney Marathon weekend events in Walt Disney World. Congratulations to everyone who walked, walked, jogged, cheered, signed up, lined up, and participated in this weekend's event. It is an amazing experience, whether it is your first 5K, whether you're cheering, volunteering, or ran dopey. It really, I know for me and for so many people, is more of a community and a fun event than it is an athletic event. But this is not the first, nor shall it be the last, sports-themed weekend in Walt Disney World, because for a number of years, going back more than 20 years ago, there was a weekend-long sports-themed special event that took place in one of the Disney parks in Walt Disney World. Your challenge last week was to tell me, what was it called and where was it held? Did you know? Did you ever go? Did you get it right? Because I'm talking about ESPN The Weekend at the Disney MGM Studios. This event debuted in 2004, took place in early spring, sort of coinciding with the lead-up to NCAA March Madness and the start of baseball training in Florida, really designed to celebrate the intersection of both sports and entertainment, with a lot of unique opportunities for guests to interact with personalities, athletes, and iconic sports figures, and as well as participate in interactive events as well. And Disney MGM/Hollywood Studios was transformed into really a sports fan paradise, using a lot of locations, some of which are not there anymore, to do things like live ESPN broadcasts. There was a lot of athlete appearances from NFL, NBA, hockey, Olympic champions, interactive experiences where you can test your skills in sports zones for pitching, basketball, and football. There were trivia contests, there were daily motorcades, and you never know who you might see around the corner, whether it was Shaquille O'Neal or Drew Brees or Chris Berman. The event really grew year over year until 2011, which was the final year for ESPN The Weeknd. And I don't think it was because the event wasn't popular. In fact, I think it was just the opposite. But I think Disney sort of shifted, wanting to focus their sports attention on ESPN, Wide World of Sports, etc. Anyway, I took all the correct entries, as I do every week, randomly selected one, and last week you were playing for a WW Radio prize package that includes keychain, stickers, pin, a new vinyl sticker, and a mystery prize, which I may or may not have purchased for you from the Disney Treasure. And last week's winner, randomly selected, is Jimmy Barlow. So Jimmy, congratulations, your prize package is already on the way, and if you played last week and didn't win, that's okay, because here's your next chance to enter in this week's Walt Disney World Trivia Challenge. So we'll go from sports to the Festival of the Arts, which is kicking off probably as you are listening to this episode. And in addition to all the things that you can see and do and eat, there's also a scavenger hunt, which you can purchase, take around the festival, and if you complete it, get a keepsake reward. And your question this week is simply to tell me, what is the name of the scavenger hunt that takes place during the Festival of the Arts featuring Figment? You have until Sunday, January 19th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern to go to www.radio.com, click on this week's podcast. Again, you'll be playing for a prize package that includes the keychain, stickers, pin, and I'll throw in another mystery prize. So good luck and have fun. That is going to do it for this week's show. Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in this and every week. I am so excited for this year's Epcot International Festival of the Arts, which runs from January 17th through February 24th. It is included with your Epcot park admission, and there is so much to do for adults and kids. There's paint-by-number murals, there's the art and artist displays, chalk art, photo ops, the concert series, animation academy, visual art performances, music, amazing food studios, and merchandise. I will, of course, have more from the festival, including live broadcasts from the festival on Facebook and YouTube. The best way to make sure you don't miss a thing, not just in terms of live broadcasts, but other things we have going on at WW Radio, is to subscribe to our WW Radio newsletter. It is free. It is delivered to your inbox every week. And when you do sign up, you also get a free copy of my 102 Things to Do at Walt Disney World at Least Once book. You can sign up by going to wwradio.com/subscribe. And definitely sign up, because I'm going to try and also go live from the festival on one or more Wednesday nights, maybe again another day during the week on our Facebook and YouTube channel. And speaking of going live and sharing content, not just from Walt Disney World, but other mystery locations, next week from January 20th through the 23rd, I will be on a secret research mission for something that I am planning in the future. I'll be sharing via Facebook and YouTube Live, as well as on my Instagram stories and posts at instagram.com/LouMongello. So I invite you to please follow along with me on that week-long adventure. Later on this week, I'll be speaking at PodFest here in Orlando. If you are a podcaster or want to be one, I would love to see you at this incredible event, and one that I've been part of since the very beginning. On Thursday, January 16th, I will be on a panel talking about maximizing impact and how to get the most out of your podcast interviews. On Friday, January 17th, I will be on a Podcast Hall of Fame panel talking about the origins and evolutions of the medium. On Friday afternoon, my session on the relationship economy, unlocking the power of community and collaboration, will be in the afternoon. And speaking of the Podcast Hall of Fame, again, thanks to, because of, and something I am incredibly humbled and honored to receive on behalf of you, on Friday, January 17th at 7 p.m., I'll be inducted into the Podcast Hall of Fame. It is something I take very seriously and very grateful for. Again, this is because of and thanks to and for and with you. And although it won't be streamed live, it will be available to watch on YouTube on Sunday. I will share a link to the full replay on my socials. And as I say, all of these things that I am so fortunate and blessed and able to do and share with you are because of you. And if you are a creator or solopreneur or a dreamer or doer, and you're looking to take that idea and turn it into a business. If you're looking to gain clarity or build momentum and create a business and brand so that you can do what you love every single day, I invite you to please join me for my Momentum Retreat this January or my Momentum Weekend Workshop, both in Walt Disney World this October, where I can help you turn your goals into reality. The Momentum Weekend Retreat is March 14th through the 16th. There are only 2 out of the 6 spots left. It is an intimate, immersive, very highly personalized weekend designed to help you focus on your goals, overcome challenges, and create a clear path to success. Basically, I rent a large, luxurious vacation home in Orlando, not far from Walt Disney World, where other creators and entrepreneurs who are investing in themselves and want to take their business and brand to the next level get expert guidance, personalized strategies, mastermind, and build dedicated time to get clarity and make progress in their business. This is now, I think, my 7th or 8th year doing this, and I think this really offers the unparalleled opportunities for connection, collaboration, and breakthroughs that you just won't find anywhere else. And on October 16th through the 20th, now extended to 4 days, my Momentum Weekend Workshop in Walt Disney World is a hands-on weekend workshop that combines practical and tactical lessons, real-world strategies, and collaborative masterminding to help you start, grow, and monetize your business and brand. More importantly, you do the work in the room so that you come out at a different place than when you enter on Thursday, so that you're walking away not just with momentum, but a clear path, proven strategies, and a new energized mindset to help you build and scale your business while you are learning from, as well as connecting with like-minded peers. And super early bird pricing ends soon, so this is your last chance to lock in the lowest price and secure a spot before it sells out. To learn more, to ask me any questions, and to register for either or both of the events, please go to loumangiello.com. And again, just because this is the end of the episode, it does not mean it's the end of the fun. Please come be part of the community and conversation over in the WW Radio Clubhouse on Facebook. It's wwradio.com/clubhouse. If you have a question, a comment, or just a hello from the parks that you want to share, you can call the voicemail at 407-900-9391. That's 407-900-WDW1. Connect and chat with me on social, but remember, nothing beats a handshake and a hug, so please check out our events page over at wwradio.com or facebook.com/wwradio. Thanks as always to my friend, my partner over at Mouse Fan Travel. No matter where you want to go, they are, and for nearly 20 years have been, my go-to, trusted, and recommended partner. They will handle the planning so you can focus on making the memories. They offer fee-free vacation planning services tailored to, customized, and personalized for you. But it is that level of personal service that really is their differentiator. It is their hallmark. For a free, no-obligation quote, visit mousefantravel.com. And if you like what you hear, and I hope that you do, please help spread the word. Share the show, tell a friend, share it on social, and rate and review the podcast over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if there's ever anything I can do for you, any way that I can help you, something you'd like to hear on the show, please reach out and let me know. Stay tuned over the next few weeks. I have some exciting things that I've been working on, getting ready to launch and share with you. But in the meantime, please remember to be kind, to choose the good, have an amazing day, and even better tomorrow. I love and appreciate you. See you soon.